You still rolling, Matt?
Yeah, and hating
All
because I'm riding dirty.
right. Whoa. That's pretty intense.
We rolling. They hating. Something, something, because we're riding dirty. Gonna catch me riding dirty. Gonna catch me riding dirty.
Whoa. Man, don't think this is. That was not expected.
Nerd Appropriate Episode 50, now with more slide whistle.
Alrighty, welcome to episode 50.
Whoa,
the
man, I hope there's some
podcast.
Reverb.
Nerdappropriate.com.
We have that. We have the tools.
We can rebuild that intro. We can make it better. Hey guys.
How you doing, man?
We made it to 50. I know we do this every once in a while. We have these like landmark episodes that we're like, we made it, as if somebody was shooting at us while we were trying to get here.
Yeah,
it's true. But I'm not used to actually achieving things in life. So so getting to 50 podcasts is actually a monumental occurrence in my life. So I'm very proud of both of you, and I'm very proud of me too.
Thanks, nice. Mom.
Would you like some milk?
Well, it's a big deal. I think it shows our dedication and our love for this project, and it's been pretty awesome. So I guess it's pretty cool. I mean, it's really cool that we made it this far and we're still doing it. So
it is.
So what are we gonna do today, fellas?
Episode 50 is crazy.
It's action packed.
I don't even know.
Really? Because we wrote it down. I mean,
we did.
We have show notes.
Let's read some of the stuff then. What do we got? What do we got?
Well, we've got a special kind of introduction questionnaire. When you posted an article about doing episode 50, and you said, you know, if anybody wants to hear anything or know anything, like, post your questions, send some responses, and we got some really good ones, and we're gonna do one of them right up front from Alejandro about some questions about us and about the podcast.
Yes, secrets, if you will, secrets of our mysterious lives.
And we've got news. We're going to talk about the new Borderlands 2 trailer, which was fucking awesome.
Yes.
We're going to talk about the Mass Effect DLC and how much it will actually cost Ash to purchase all of this stuff.
It's going to hurt. It's going to really hurt, but I'm going to do it all. I'm getting the Mass Effect panties and everything. Yes.
We've got some
Mass
awesome
panties. Yeah.
Mass panties.
Yeah, Max.
Is that going to raise your global initiative or whatever it is? Your
galactic readiness level? Yeah, it's going to raise, like, they're kind of like a banana hammock, but they look like.
Keep going.
Yeah. They look like Rex's face, but with, like, the where the wiener slot is, you know. Perfect. Anyway, let's keep going.
We've got music, tons of music. We've got a chiptune artist named Leanie. We're going to play a few of her songs. It's a her, right? Yeah, she sings. It's a few of her songs. And do you ever do that when you're talking on the podcast? You realize you just said something that you have no actual basis for if it's true or not, like right after you say it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you're like, she, and then you're like, is it a girl? I have no idea if it's a girl.
Or a group or five people. Yeah, no, it's just one girl.
One lady
who does music.
And we also
sang
music from Glitch Mob today, which is awesome.
Yes.
We love us.
Big
to Glitch
thanks.
Mob.
Big thanks to them.
We're doing reviews of the new Alan Wake arcade game. We've got Mass Effect 3 demo and multiplayer demo talk. We've got Hero Academy kind of part two-ish. They added some things, right, Ash? A new death.
Yeah, they added the dwarves, and we're going to talk about the dwarves and how Scott's an evil son of a bitch.
I actually finished the Oscar Deathmatch. That's right. I watched all 9 Best Picture movies in 3 weeks.
Amazing.
And we're going to talk about that. I've got a comic awesome book pick of the week. We're going to do a little bit of Gotham City Imposters talk since it's a couple weeks old now, but I have been playing it a bunch and wanted to talk about it.
Sweet.
Scott and I played the SSX demo. We will do a little bit of that. And then we have a gigantic Twitter question. We got really great responses from all over the place.
We asked the question about what video games will be art in 100 years, and we had folks from Harmonix chime in, and Team Unicorn chimed in, and folks from BioWare chimed in, and we just had like a great response to this, so we're really looking forward to you sticking around to the end of the episode to hear what all these industry folk had to say, because they have some really, really great answers. Yeah,
not only them, and but also all of our listeners, the awesome people.
Yes,
talk to us on Twitter and come to our site and are just good folk in general. So
thank them so much for helping us with
everything
that
we do. I think
do.
The support of our community and fan base is what keeps this site going. So thank you for responding to these questions. And
yeah. And it means a whole lot.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and kick it off. I'm going to read the question from Alejandro. Alejandro is a good friend of ours. He actually met us through my wife, Melissa. He's a good dude. And he posted up on the site, said, "Hey, Matt, Ash, and Scott. I've had the pleasure of meeting you all in Orlando, but this is my first post on the site, so I wanted to say that I'm a big fan of the podcast. I'm not sure how much time you intend to spend talking about yourselves and Nerd Appropriate in lieu of this anniversary episode, but a few topics that I believe other fans would enjoy hearing about could be," and then he has four questions here for us to kind of answer.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ash posted this up because I think you thought it was unique. We don't usually talk about us and the podcast too much. We kind of talk about everything else, so we're going to go through these.
Let's talk about us for a little bit.
Let's talk about us. And we'll try and make it not as boring as possible, but we do get a lot of questions. Not a lot of questions. On occasion, we get a question.
Millions of questions.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Our email boxes are just filled with questions.
It's insane.
Yes. Yeah. But the first question is, have your lives changed in a drastic way because of NA, or how much has changed since NA has started? And I think all of us have very different responses to this. So we're just going to run through this and explain how things have changed for us since the site started.
Hey, Sniffles, what's your answer?
Well, I think aside from getting VIP access to clubs and bottle service, things really haven't changed that much. But, you know, we mentioned in the past that Matt and I used to play in a band together, and that was sort of an activity that sort of existed outside of our work lives, I suppose, and normal social lives. And it really was a thing that kind of took on a life of its own. And I think this website, is doing the same thing in place of like, it is like being in a band at times in the way that you conduct business. But it's also something that's really enjoyable in a way. It's like an outlet to put all of your creative energy into it. So in that respect, it hasn't really changed a lot, but like, this is a good thing. This website, this podcast, is a really good thing. I'm glad we have it. That's kind of my answer in a nutshell.
I agree wholeheartedly. What about you, Matthias?
I have kind of like two answers, I guess. NA hasn't actually super changed my life. It's given me stuff to do, stuff to work on. Like, I do web stuff for a living, and it's given me that kind of outlet to have an outside project to work on that's not necessarily like not me, you know. I mean, I don't know, it's got you guys behind it too, so I feel like I'm doing it for something larger than just some stupid idea that I have.
You're a part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. It's just opened opportunities to meet good people and just like have fun talking about stuff that I talk about all the time anyways. It's forced me to do stuff that I've always thought about doing, like, you know, watching all of the best pictures for the Oscars, and then like, but it gives me a reason to do it, you know. And that's kind of how it's changed my life. As far as my life changing, I got a job in New York at Marvel Comics and moved across the country. So
because of the website, obviously, right?
Because of the website, they saw it. They said, "This guy is amazing," and they hired me right away because I wrote about comics on the website.
Nice.
Yes, we'll let people believe that.
Yeah,
exactly.
So
dreams do come true, everyone. Just start your own blog, and Marvel will hire you.
Marvel will hire you.
There you go.
It's dreamy. So Ash, how about you?
I mean, I'm in the same boat as you guys. It is an amazing outlet. My whole life, I've always really enjoyed being around creative people, and I've always, you know, kind of endeavored to be a creative person myself. My job at the site is sort of like the PR guy, so I do a lot of talking and finagling to get interviews and stuff. And what I've discovered is a lot of people in this industry are pretty awesome, and it's been really a lot of fun. I don't know, it's been 15, 16 months now since we started the site, watching the site grow and actually gain a tiny little bit of legitimacy, where people actually, you know, they've heard of us before, we're getting press passes and getting to go to these events that we've only read about in the past. And even though we're still very much the new kids on the block, people are super nice to us, and it's great to be part of this big nerd community that is, I think, really special to all of us. In terms of changing my life in a drastic way, no. I mean, we don't, you know, we're not like rolling in piles of money because of the site or anything like that. So we all still have day jobs. We all still plug away at everything that we do. But we've made a lot of super good friends because of this. And, you know, Matt and I, when we went to PAX last year, you know, just sitting, you know, sitting at the same table as like, you know, Adam Sessler and like the guys from Weekend Confirmed. And it's just like, oh, okay, this is a very small industry, and everyone is, everyone is just kind of in it, you know?
So, can I say, I have a memory, a very vivid memory related to Rated NA or related to Nerd Appropriate. Yeah. Well, I have a couple, but one of them is before it even started, Ash and I had gone to Comic-Con 2 years ago with our wives. And it really is an amazing experience to go to Comic-Con, if for nothing else, just to be surrounded by nothing but, you know, what you're into and all of that. But we'd come home and we were kind of like on the low of being back from Comic-Con. And it was, I think it was like August, September. And I was like, dude, I really think we should start this website. I think we should just do it. Like, why not? This is what we do all the time anyways. I really want to bring Scott into it. And because if I'm not wrong, like, you guys weren't super friends before the site started, right? Like, you knew it, you were friends. We all hung out.
Yeah. We but not like, you know, giving each other back rubs and stuff like we
right.
do now.
And now we do. Now we all do the train and back rub each
massage
other.
Massage train. That's what we do.
But I have that memory of sitting on the curb with you and you going like, yeah, I think it'd be cool. I think it'd be a good idea. Like, what do you want to do? Like, how do we do it? And I was like, I don't know. And then we just started talking about it, and then it just became a thing.
I remember that day pretty vividly as well. And it was sort of like, you know, you and I had both like, we had both wanted to do some sort of blog for a while.
Yeah.
And I also remember sitting around in Scott's den.
Yes.
For like 5 hours trying to think of the damn name.
And
like,
oh my God.
Oh, that was horrible. But anyway, so those are some great answers. And let's go on to number two. Number two is, are there any particular interviews or opportunities you had because of NA that stand out? Interviews and opportunities. So what do you guys think about that one?
I think you kind of provided a good segue with your response to that first question into this one. I think, like, as far as opportunities go, like, you know, like, you've gotten to talk to a lot of people. I think, like, maybe, like, the part of it for me was, like, when I got to help write some of the questions for the Alessandra Torresani interview, mm-hmm. and she gave a shout-out to me in the interview, and that was, like, super awesome. You know, it's just, like, stuff like that, when you can get as close to some of these people as you do, and, like, you find out that they're just normal people, and for the most part everybody's super nice, and it's just mm-hmm. like you know, just the fact that just by putting in the effort, you know, like, there's kind of like the saying, like, you can't win the lottery if you don't buy a ticket. Just by putting in the effort, you know, we can get these press passes to go to like things like PAX East and get to meet these people and like do the things we love. I think for me, that's kind of like kind of what the bonus is to doing this, is just like you know, we're putting the effort in, but we're also sort of being rewarded for the effort at the same time.
Absolutely. It's like, you know, you get to actually become part of this industry that you admire, even if we're just a tiny little asteroid kind of circling around the industry.
Yeah.
We are definitely not a big part of it by any means, but we are part of it now, which is all that we've ever really asked for. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
What about you, Matt?
PAX. I mean, PAX was just an awesome experience, and to be able to go with a press pass and be able to, you know, which didn't buy us much, but it did give us a room where we could write and kind of a home base to set up and do things. And it definitely got us through the kind of gates of like, come on back. Like, let's show you this game so you guys can write about it. And being able to play Star Wars before anybody else was awesome. Like, I mean, PAX was just an incredible experience. Honestly, I would have never gone if it weren't for the site. And I definitely wouldn't have had a press pass if it weren't for the site. So That was just an awesome opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. For myself, it's weird since I do stuff. I geek out a lot over some of the people that we get to talk to and everything. And probably the one thing that stands out the most is when I did that Allie Hillis interview, and she was so nice and so accommodating and just a blast to talk to. And I actually ended up like forming, you know, a dialogue with her, and we kind of communicate back and forth, and she's been super supportive of the site, which is awesome. I mean, she went on like BioWare TV and mentioned us and mentions us in other interviews and things like that. But like just last week, and I shit you not, like I had this problem with my dog, and my dog had run and busted out a window in my house, and he's just been like a little bit more aggressive and stuff. And Allie Hillis, for those that don't know, she's the voice of Liara in Mass Effect and Lightning in Final Fantasy. And, you know, she acts in a bunch of stuff, and she's just a super nice person, but she's also, a dog rescuer in her off time. And so she knows a lot about dog behavior and stuff. And I was just kind of like, you know, we were talking about her doing a bumper for the podcast, and we got to talk about the dog and everything like that. And I ended up in a phone conversation with her for nearly an hour about dog behavior and just, and all this stuff. And I'm like, it just kind of was blowing my mind, because it was like, okay, well, here's this incredibly nice person that's going out of their way to help me, you know, teach my dog how to be a better dog.
Yeah.
And it's like someone that like I, you know, genuinely admire as an actor. So it has opened a lot of doors in that sense, to where we are, you know, actually communicating with a lot of people that we admire. So I like that a lot.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was the first audio interview that you conducted, right? Is that true?
Yeah.
That was the first audio. That's
pretty awesome as well.
Yeah. Using the same technology that we are using to record this podcast.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So yeah, that was very fun.
Cool. The third one is, what were the thoughts of your families and friends at Nerd Appropriate's inception compared to now?
Well, when we started, nobody knew about it to begin with.
Yeah, that's true. I think this has kind of been a roller coaster ride. A couple episodes in, none of our friends were really listening. And then I think a lot of our close friends were actually tuning into we used to live cast this a long time ago.
Yeah.
Until bandwidth issues kind of destroyed the whole concept. And then we had a lot of people that were, you know, joining in our live cast. But now I don't know if anyone in our close circle really pays too much attention anymore. I think they're kind of over it, which is fine. I mean, we have people outside of our circle now that are supporting us. And I shouldn't say no one in our circle is supporting us, but yeah. I think a lot of them have bowed out and moved on to less nerdy conversations in life.
I don't know. I don't know that that's true, because I think, you know, I know Ryan still listens to it every week. I think Micah still listens to it, right? I think Derek still listens to it. There's a bunch of people that I think still support it, but
yeah.
So
yeah.
I think the other thing is that, you know, there were those reactions initially where like somebody heard that we were doing a podcast, and because they're our friends, they would check it out, and we'd get those reactions like, "Hey, dude, I listened to like 5 minutes of your podcast. I had no idea what you were talking about."
Yeah, no one had any idea.
Yeah. Yeah. But then at the same time, I've run into people at parties, and I've been like, who like I was friends with or had mutual acquaintances, and you know, I didn't tell them about I didn't bring it up in conversation, but they're like, "Hey man, I listened to your podcast." Yeah. And I was like, "Really?" Because yeah, you know, like I had no idea that you listened.
I found that a lot of our friends who aren't very nerdy or not into like video games and comics and stuff have like passed us to, they're like, "Hey, my friends are doing a podcast. I don't really know what's going on, but you're into comic books. You should really check it out." And like, then we get like weird, like friends by association people that are coming into it, which is cool. I will say that for me, part of it is Melissa has been like awesome as far as pushing and being supportive and just being like, do it. Like, you guys need to do this, you know? And that's been really cool. I know all of our significant others have been very easygoing about giving up, you know, an hour or two of once a week that we do this podcast, and being supportive of our writing and saying like, you know, telling us to do it more and fixing my awful grammar and things like that.
In terms of the family's question, I know my mom listens to the podcast and will tell me things like, "Why do you swear so much?"
Oh, that's awesome.
Why in episode 34 did you say the word vagina? And I'll be like, "Mom, I don't even remember saying that." She's like, "Don't say vagina." Yeah.
I love getting on Facebook and seeing that your mom liked stuff. Like, she'll like articles I wrote. She'll be like, "Like, great article, Matt." And I'm like, "That's just mom."
Yeah, she's our number one fan, which is, I love it. It's great. She probably has no idea what any of this stuff means, but she wants to.
And that's
this is coming from as a kid, by the way. My mom was not a supporter of video games. She thought they were like poisoning me and making me into like a horrible person. So it is interesting to see how she's turned around, and now she is a slightly more supportive of gaming. So,
and I think this is a good segue into our final question, which is, has anything occurred because of NA that you've never anticipated?
Anything occurred because of NA that
we're still doing it.
Yeah.
Well, just recently, I mean, in the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, we've had this really, an explosion of incredibly creative and interesting people that have helped us either through participating on our podcasts or doing art for our site or giving us audio. And so slowly I've noticed that there has been a little bit of a community building. And that to me is what the site was really all about. So I wasn't ever really anticipating having like this at this point, small community of very, very creative people, but that is what I think is the best, you know?
I'd agree.
Yeah, I agree too. I don't really think there's much beyond that you can say other than the fact that I guess I thought when we started doing this, that this would always be something that would be like, we would always have to do everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now we're kind of like forming relationships with this community of people who are like-minded to us and have this same like creative passion. Like, you know, and the creativity, it manifests itself in different ways. And I'm just glad that we can interact with these people and exchange like sort of creative energy with them. And it's just absolutely. It feels really good.
Well, I hope that was informative.
Yep.
Yes. Hopefully we didn't bore you to death with tales of ourselves, but every 50 episodes or so, we get to talk about us.
Yeah.
Yep.
So let's talk about other things now.
Let's
talk about Wub Wub.
Wub 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 Wub.
Can we play a clip from this audio? Because it brings me so much joy. And I know you hate it, Scott.
I think we might be able to. I'm not exactly sure, but maybe I'll just splice in a little bit of it.
Yeah,
I don't think they'll mind.
We'll let Scott splice them in. We'll pretend. Wait, hold on. We'll count to three. Pretend like it happened.
Yeah!
Oh man, that was crazy.
That trailer's insane.
I love it. No, I just saw this. So what we're talking about is the new Borderlands Doomsday trailer that just dropped this week, and it is incredible because
it certainly did drop.
It did.
To use that in the literal sense.
Yes, in so many ways.
Scott,
I'm so excited for this. I'm so excited for this. Oh, probably after Mass Effect drops. At this point, by the time this is out next week. Which is fucking ridiculous. After Mass Effect drops, this is probably my most anticipated game of 2012, I would say.
I mean, Scott, they're in on the joke. Does it really bother you without they're like in on the joke the whole time?
No, it's just like, it's kind of funny to me a little bit. You know, like, I get it, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that there's a huge like dubstep community out there. I don't listen to it enough to be able to tell the difference between like,
well, I mean, to me, it's like, it's the same way that they put out a zombie game, and they like the whole thing was like, we're in on the joke every time. Like every time Borderlands does something, it's very like, here you go, guys. We completely know. Like, you know, the whole time they're not doing it like to market themselves to the dubstep audience. They're doing it because they could put Claptrap dancing to a dubstep song in the middle of it. You know, like to me, it was awesome. I thought they did a fantastic job with the trailer, and I agree, Ash. I am super excited. This is one of my favorite multiplayer games of probably all time. So more of it is nothing but awesome to me. Like, I just want more Borderlands.
It looks great. I love the new characters. I love the new ninja guy, Zero.
Zero.
Looks ridiculous. They all look great. All the new character design's great. I think they're really plugging. They're saying that there's going to be a much stronger narrative this time, which is one of the major faults of the first Borderlands. So the fact that there's going to be a great story,
and, as they say, and there's like going to be 870 bazillion guns that are more bazillioner.
Yes. I'm really excited for that. So I should know this, but does it have a release date yet?
I think it's fall, isn't it?
Yeah.
Towards the end of the year, right?
It's probably Q4, but I don't think it actually has a solid date yet. But I definitely know what we will all be playing in the winter. So hopefully... look us up on XBL, and we will be playing with you as well.
It looks like
September.
September 18.
Oh, nice. September 18th, Borderlands 2. Do you guys have any favorite character class that you're leaning toward?
I always play the female.
You did? You played the female last time? The Siren?
That's just like what I always liked. I like to be fast. So whoever like the fast character is, you know.
Yeah.
I like to be run around.
I was the hunter, and I love the shit out of the hunter.
Yeah, I was Roland the soldier in the last game, and the soldier class now is called Commando, and it looks even better.
Is that the dude that's like carrying the shoulder mounted rocket launchers on his pack?
Yeah.
He looks ridiculous.
He looks cool.
I was trying to figure out who the hunter class was this time.
It's Zero the ninja.
That's the hunter.
I think he'll probably have an option to go melee or range. Mm-hmm. I mean, which you could do with the last hunter. I did that melee hunter, and it didn't work great, but it was still kind of fun.
The range hunter was unbelievable. But
oh, so much fun. Yeah. All right, so that was a little tiny tidbit of Borderlands 2 info. And now comes some info about Mass Effect. And this is where even me, I am like probably the biggest supporter in the world of this franchise. Even with my Krogan thong that I have on right now.
So let me ask you, Ash. Ash, yeah. Would you pay $50 for all of the DLC in Mass Effect?
For all the DLC?
Yeah. Would you pay $200 for all of the DLC in Mass Effect?
Oh, all of it?
Yeah, everything.
Yes, I would pay $200.
Maybe like, do you mean $200 for the DLC or like for the complete experience, including the cost of the game?
For everything.
Including the cost of the game.
The cost of the game, the, you know, all of the DLC, all everything you can possibly get with the game, you know, from all the extras that you can have.
That might be my limit, is $200.
That's probably where I would stop as well.
So you're saying that you wouldn't pay $870 for everything that you can get in the game?
Okay, so to clarify, with that $870, you're also getting a lot of actual physical objects. You're getting like a keyboard and like a mouse pad.
It's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek article that was written.
Yeah, so, well, it's Destructoid for one, which is always tongue-in-cheek generally. But Chris, one of their writers, Chris Carter, put together a list. He kind of amassed everything that you can buy for Mass Effect 3 that will give you something in the game. And that includes the collector's edition, all of the pre-order bonuses, which is stuff like ordering on Origin, ordering on GameStop, playing Kingdoms of Amular, playing the iOS games, getting the iOS games, downloading the DLC, buying all of the figurines. Getting
all of the Razer peripherals.
Getting all of the Razer peripherals. Buying the Chimera head, or that's a Razer peripheral. Getting I think it's Razer, and some of the more of the toys. In total, you will end up spending $870, but you will have every piece of DLC that you can possibly get for the game at release.
Now, to be fair, I read that the day one DLC is included if you buy the collector's edition of the game.
Yes.
And then it looks like...
So it's $860 is what you're saying.
Right. But then it also looks like, you know, for many of these additional physical items, you get the collector assault rifle plus like a DLC power-up, which I assume is something for multiplayer that you would normally be able to get just by playing the game anyways.
Right, but this is by
probably one of those like packs, you know?
Those
packs. Which I'm sure you'll be able to get those packs by like getting Dr. Pepper and shit in a couple weeks too, I'm imagining.
Right. And then you were saying, Ash, that those power-ups stack, though, too, on top of that, right?
Yeah, so let's say you buy all the Razer stuff. You'll just basically get a more and more powerful version of some of the items. So, you know, what a lot of the other sites and podcasts are kind of bringing up is, well, they must not care too much about game balance if they're allowing this, you know, weapon power stacking. But I don't think that's going to detract from the single player experience. I mean, if you want to play the game and have it be harder, put it on insane. I don't care if you have a fucking bazooka, you're going to get your ass kicked. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I mean, so this is kind of ridiculous, right? I love Mass Effect. I will support them to the end of the day, but this is kind of ludicrous. this is a lot of shit you can pushing. Buy.
I think instead of thinking of it that way, it's probably better to think of it as like, if you buy the physical items, like, and you would only do that if you wanted to anyways, then you are rewarded with extra DLC, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a necessary thing to have. But
I think the people that are getting the most upset about this are the people that are super fans that want to have every single possible piece of DLC. And that in order to do that, they're going to have to shell out that much money. Like, I am a super fan. I will totally admit that. I may grab the controller because I need a new one anyway, and it looks awesome.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I'm not going to go out of my way to get these pieces. There's so much DLC at this point, and there's so many guns that, like, I don't need more. Okay. I've, like, reached capacity.
Like, my thing is, like, just design it awesome, and I'll buy it. You know, like, if it's an awesome toy, I'll go get the toy. I don't need DLC to, like, encourage me. But I guess as a good reward, that's cool. It's just really funny to me when you list all of this stuff and you see how much it would all cost in total.
Yeah.
To see all of this DLC, you're just like, oh my god, you know, that is a lot. That is a lot of stuff, and that doesn't include DLC from here on out. There's gonna be another probably $50 in DLC from here on out, if not more.
Yeah, I mean, even when SWTOR was launched, Razer put out a set of peripherals licensed for that game too, and the keyboard that came out for that game was $250.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I don't know, the price of a PS Vita or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a pretty hefty investment.
That's pretty incredible.
Which, as a sidebar in the news, anybody picking that up this week?
No, absolutely
Vita?
Not.
No.
All right.
Because I think it's a beautiful piece of hardware, but I also, we'll talk about Hero Academy in a bit, but I'm realizing that it is completely possible with games like Squids and Hero Academy to have a AAA experience on a handheld for $2.
Yeah.
And it cost me nothing more than the price of my phone and that $2.
Yeah. I mean, right now, the only thing that I would want the PS Vita for is just to play the Uncharted game. So if I could
rent heard.
One, right. And I'm pretty sure, because I played it in store, I played a demo in store, and I'm pretty sure that Uncharted game is really more of like a demo for the hardware functionality of the PS Vita, so like the touch screen, the gyroscopes, etc.
Yeah.
I think all read the same stuff.
Cool. Yes, exactly.
Cool.
So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with some reviews.
All right, okie doke.
I'm gonna go grab a soda pop.
That was chiptune artist Leany with the song Conspiracy Theory from the album The Only Now. Just want to talk about Leany real quick and sort of how I became aware of her. Kotaku posted an article about her recently, earlier this month. She did a chiptune cover of the song Video Games by Lana Del Rey, and then sort of did a music video to go with it. That song is posted on an album called Headphones on Your Heart. And the significance of Headphones on Your Heart was it was one of the first songs that Leany had written for an album a few years back. And it's sort of a song about like being positive and not being depressed. And when she wrote that song, she actually got a lot of feedback from the community about people that were depressed and like because of listening to her music decided like not to kill themselves, basically. And kind of gave them hope and stay positive. So what she did was she released an EP for this song, Headphones on Your Heart. And all of the proceeds from the album go to benefit the Jed Foundation, which is an organization, a ben- uh, let me see, an organization whose goal is to prevent suicides among like students.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so
I'm gonna go purchase it admirable. Right now.
Me too, actually.
Yeah, so the album, the EP is called Headphones on Your Heart. It's a 6-song EP. And everything benefits whatever you, it's $5 or pay what you want. So like I said, the Jed Foundation, from the website, it says Jed Foundation has emerged as a leader in protecting the emotional health of America's 18 million college students. And so definitely a big deal. I mean, being both a former and current college student, I understand that it can be very stressful. So it's cool that her music has reached these people and like basically helped them out. And just real quick, she's got two other albums that came out recently called Labyrinth and The Only Now. And, they're both really good for different reasons. So I encourage everyone to go visit her web, her Bandcamp at leeni.bandcamp.com.
Purchase.
Awesome.
Yep. And we're going to play some of her music, I believe at the end of the podcast as well. So thank you very much, Leeni, for letting us use your music.
We need to like pay her the $10 we've made at this site and have her, make us our own song.
Well, maybe we'll talk to her about that.
Maybe we should. Will.
Excellent. Okay, so
so good.
That's all right. I encourage everybody to go check her out, and later on in the podcast we'll play something else.
Awesome.
Cool.
So Scott, very don't cool. stop talking. You're up all first. Right. Alan Wake, American Nightmare.
Holy crap.
I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you.
So we should say that you are clearly the biggest Alan Wake fan of the three of us.
Yeah, I'm the penultimate Alan Wake fan. This game sort of picks up story-wise where the last game left off after the DLC. So if you're not familiar with Alan Wake, what the premise of the game is, it's created by Remedy, who's the studio behind the first two Max Payne games. And if you're kind of wondering why Max Payne 3 kind of looks like a mashup of GTA and Kane and Lynch, it's because they're not doing that game. They're doing Alan Wake.
Wow.
So Alan Wake is sort of a very much narrative inspired by Stephen King / The Twilight Zone, I guess. Alan Wake is a writer who visits a town to get inspiration to write a novel. Basically, in the first game, shit goes down and like all of his stories start to come to life, and he fights the darkness with light. So he carries a flashlight and a gun. And it's not really, it's sort of a third person shooter, but the game mechanic is not necessarily the central focus of the game. It's meant to be sort of scary and spooky and strange.
It is a great, great survival horror game.
So this game, what I'll say about it immediately is that it's not so much survival horror this time around as it is more like Twilight Zone strangeness, you know?
Okay.
So like in the first game, you could listen to the radio. There's radios in the game and TVs you can watch. And when you watch the TVs and listen to the radios, like basically the game kind of like fucks with you a little bit and like just kind of taunts you and makes you crazy. And like this game,
there's actually live action sequences where the CG Alan is looking at a human Alan on the TV and yeah. They're looking back at one another, and you're like, it gets under your skin for some strange reason. The whole game does it. It's very jarring, and it feels like as you're playing it, the Alan Wake series, it feels like you're dreaming, which is really remarkable to accomplish that very, bizarre kind of feeling.
The thing that I will say about this game that is remarkable is that it's a downloadable title, and this game probably makes the best use of the limited space, like physical, like space of a game, like probably of like any of the Xbox arcade titles that I've ever played, because it's a third person shooter. I probably got like maybe 5 or 6 hours out of the game, but it feels like it really does push its way towards being like a full game.
Wow. And this is just one of several chapters, correct?
That is correct. So like what they're doing with this game now is that they're making it episodic. And the first Alan Wake was episodic as well.
Right.
So they're basically continuing the story and just kind of telling you what's happening. So right now in this game, Alan Wake is being antagonized by sort of his alter darkness ego, whose name is Mr. Scratch.
Okay.
So Mr. Scratch is basically sending the darkness after Alan Wake. He has him like trapped in this world. And it's just like, I don't want to say too much about the story in case anybody wants to play it, because
yeah. The
things they do with like the limited sort of like resources that they have are pretty amazing.
That's great. And so do you feel as though this is this serves the story well to release it in chunks, or would you have rather seen it be a full title on a disc?
Well, I mean, of course I would like to have more to play, and I think that some people might be annoyed by what the game does to make it work the way it does. But I mean, for me, I just kind of let it happen, you know, like I'm the kind of person who, like, you know, you have to search for manuscript pages again. And I actually do read all the manuscript pages because they do really enrich the story of the game. And if you can actually take the time to listen to the radio broadcasts, watch the TV clips, and then read the manuscript pages, the experience becomes much more enriched by sort of like letting yourself become immersed in the world. And I think that's really like what makes this game work.
Incredible. So are any of the supporting characters back from the first game, or is it just like Alan, you know, as you said, continuing after the DLC?
Yeah. So,
I didn't play the DLC, by the way. So will I be totally lost?
You might be like a little lost, but like really what the DLC from the original game does is it sends you like further down the rabbit hole sort of. Okay. And it really kind of takes the training wheels off the original game. It kind of makes it more insane, if you can believe that. Yeah, as an Xbox Live title, I would highly recommend this if you really want to see how much you can do with $15. There's like an arcade survival mode that I haven't even touched yet. So
that's incredible. Awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
That's awesome.
Are we ready to talk about a little Mass Effect 3?
Oh man. All right. So Mass Effect 3 multiplayer demo came out, and a single player demo as well. And both Scott and I dove right in and played quite a bit. And let's start talking about the multiplayer first, because the single player has been discussed a lot on other sites, but the multiplayer really hasn't been picked apart quite yet. First thing I want to say is the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer is really, really good. Much better than I thought it was going to be. I've always been a supporter of Mass Effect multiplayer. And in the brief write-up that I did on the multiplayer, I want to say it was on episode 1 or episode 2 of Rated NA. We all sat around and we talked for a while about what we wanted to see if there was ever a Mass Effect multiplayer. And we were goofing around and joking around saying how awesome it would be if like one person could throw up a singularity and another person could just like, you know, hit them with a, you know, a shockwave, and you could basically do all these combos together. And they pulled it off. It is so robust, and there's so much to do, and there's so much to unlock, and there's so much customization and so much depth just in the demo version. The full retail version is probably going to blow my mind.
We're probably only seeing about like a quarter of most likely what the entire experience will be.
Yeah.
Like in terms of the maps and the weapons and customization options.
Absolutely. And not just because I'm like a big Mass Effect fan, but in terms of the quality of the gameplay, it is, you know, uses the Unreal Engine. It is like the enemy AI is brilliant. Like you fight against these guys with shields called Guardians, and they will, they're really intelligent on how to use their shields and how to maneuver through the environment and how to like, you know, basically block your attacks. They did a superb job, and all the enemies react differently to your attacks. And in terms of like the level of customization, you can use every single class that exists in Mass Effect, and you can level them up and tweak them out to your heart's desire and equip them all with different guns. And you can name each one of those characters a different name and play them, you know, between rounds and things like that. So there's so much that it has going for it. I'm really, really happy that it worked out. What did you think of the game, Scott?
Something else that I remember from our original discussion, and it's probably something I brought up, is that I never wanted the multiplayer experience to be competitive. I've always wanted it to be cooperative, because I think that competitive multiplayer kind of like brings out the worst in people at times.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, and I really think that the whole like theme behind Mass Effect is to like fight against a common enemy. And so I'm glad that they chose to go this direction and didn't even bother with a competitive multiplayer component. So I was skeptical at first about going into multiplayer. And I think after one round or two rounds of you and I just playing alone in the game, I was like, I was hooked. Like, I'm a sucker for this whole idea of like buying upgrade packs but not knowing what you're getting in the package, you know?
Yeah, like the whole blind box idea is brilliant, because you have to save between matches, and you get cash for completing objectives. So it may take you a couple matches to actually have enough cash to buy a crate, but you never know what you're going to get inside the crate. So it could be a new scope for a gun. It could be an all new gun. It could be a brand new race and character class that you haven't really got to play before. And so there's a lot of mystery and a lot of carrot dangling to keep you going. But it's all in a good way because the gameplay is actually really enjoyable. So
yeah, and I think that the progression of the leveling system is not like it's not annoying, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because even getting into a game with you as a level one character, I still felt like I was contributing to the team.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're gonna feel like you're being put down by not immediately having access to these like premium upgrade kits or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the way it works in Mass Effect is, if you have an Avenger rifle and you can aim and shoot somebody in the head, you're going to be able to contribute to the team. You might be a little squishier at level one.
I was certainly squishy, yeah.
Yeah, but, after a couple hours, I would say after, an hour and a half of gameplay, you can probably get to level five, and then you won't be really squishy anymore. So no,
it was pretty solid. So
it is.
Overall, yeah, very favorable opinion of this.
It is. It's a lot of fun. And right now, the multiplayer demo only has two maps and I think I want to say 10 unlockable character archetypes. And there's many, many more, I guess, in the retail version.
And unfortunately, nothing carries over into the retail game.
Yes, nothing does. I think I'm level 97 right now.
Yeah. You will be starting
and
from
I'm not even exaggerating. Yeah. I'm level 90. I've played it probably close to, I want to say, maybe 20 hours since the demo came out, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. So it's, for free, there's no complaints there. So
cool. Kudos
to the Mass Effect multiplayer team. You guys pulled off what was thought to be impossible, and we love it. So more on that, I guess, when the retail comes out.
Cool.
I actually avoided all of this.
Yeah? Why is that?
I made a complete switch. I just decided that I have a lot of other things to play and do right now, and as opposed to previewing something I'm going to do in 2 weeks, probably in mass quantities, I decided to hold off, keep my anticipation going, and let that experience be completely fresh when I get it.
Yeah, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised then.
I have no doubt. I'm excited about it. I just with the list of other things that I'm currently playing, and like I just was like, you know what? I don't need to. It's like seeing 15 minutes of a movie before, like 2 weeks before I'm going to go see the rest of the movie. And I just decided I'm going to wait and do it all in one shot.
Well, why don't you take us into the final round of Oscar Deathmatch?
All right. Well, I did it, guys. I watched all 9 Best Picture movies.
How many of them did you regret watching?
Probably, I was actually pleasantly surprised by more of them than I thought I would be. But there were 3 that I really didn't care for very much.
Well, you thought that this week was going to be your toughest week to get through these movies.
And it was. So up first, I watched The Help, the movie about racism and borderline slavery in the 60s in Jackson, Mississippi. It's starring Viola Davis, Emma Stone, I think Bryce Dallas Howard, Jessica Chastain. Man, I'm missing a bunch of names. It's a huge list of people that are starring in this movie. And it kind of follows, it's set in the late 50s, early 60s, and it follows the story of Emma Stone, who's a writer for a newspaper, who's trying to write a book about the housemaids, the helpers, the help, quote unquote, of Jackson, Mississippi. And she sits down, and Viola Davis's character is the first one that'll talk to her. And then, because basically they're afraid for their well-being if they out what it's really like being a black maid in Jackson, Mississippi. And it is... it was good. It wasn't bad. I don't know that I loved it. I think that Viola Davis was amazing in it. Like, Viola Davis was awesome, super dynamic. Like, the character was written really well. It just was an awesome story. So Octavia Spencer is the other maid, and it kind of follows the two of them getting the courage to talk to Emma Stone about their experiences and about their stories. The famous one is there's a what's called the shit pie moment in the movie, which is pretty amazing. You ate my shit, which is pretty much what she says, and it's
wow.
awesome.
Is there actually a shit pie though?
There is actually a shit pie in the movie.
Oh, that is amazing and terrifying.
So the great things are both Octavia Spencer and Viola Davis are fantastic, written really well, just great characters, really well done. I think Viola Davis, I think they're both up for Oscars, and if both of them won, which I don't think they will, but if both of them won, I wouldn't be like, oh, that wasn't worth it. The negative is all of the white characters, literally every single one of them, with the exception of Emma Stone, are completely one-dimensional. Essentially, every white person in Jackson, Mississippi was a racist, evil person who hated all black people regardless of any... Like, it just was written really, like, single-dimensionally. And while, yes, racism was rampant, it was really bad in the South, especially in an area like Jackson, Mississippi. I can't really register that every single white person you ran into was one of the worst human beings ever created. Like, and that's kind of how they're written. And it's like, it was like almost like comically, like, you know, like an old 50s movie where there's like the villain with the handlebar mustache and they're like, yeah. I'm going to get you. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, no one does this. So it was like really good. And then it really fell flat in some of the story aspects. The ending was kind of like, meh. But it was a good movie. It was definitely not a bad movie, and I think Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer are amazing in it, and were really good. Next up was War Horse, which is Steven Spielberg's adaptation of a book that was adapted into a play that is now a movie. It follows the story of a horse, who is a thoroughbred that this like farm buys.
Does he talk?
No.
This farm
buys him to be one of their workhorses, even though he's a thoroughbred. And then he gets pulled into World War I. And it just follows the story of this horse and kind of three different families. I think it's three different characters, not families, that interact with this horse through the story. It's gorgeously shot. Spielberg is honestly, obviously, one of the best directors ever in the history of movies, and it is absolutely gorgeous and amazing. The war parts are pretty cool, but it's just boring. I mean, the movie's just fucking boring. It felt like I was watching a Disney movie about a horse for the first half of it. Like what's that, Black Beauty or whatever? It felt like that. Like, you're like, oh, cool, a story about a horse and a family. Sweet. And like, it's just really like lots of shots, like lots of like sweeping shots of fields and a horse and some like supposedly emotional moments, but it felt really ham-fisted, and it just really, I just was like, okay.
Yeah, I saw an interview with Spielberg about War Horse, and he was saying there's really no, in the war scenes, they didn't show any violence, really.
Yeah.
Like it was, they almost like cut away every time someone would get hurt or shot or anything bad was about to happen.
I mean, but in those war scenes, they do amazing cuts of the horse, like running and like all like the actual artistry of the movie is great. I just, the story is like, I feel like the book is probably pretty interesting to read.
Yeah.
Because all of the things that you can't, that you're pretty much, you're forced to just assume what the horse is feeling or doing. Like, there's no narration about the horse, you know, it's just kind of like a story. It's just like all visual, and which isn't bad, but in a book they could actually do some description and kind of have, you know, narration. I would assume the book probably gets a lot better about that than this does. It was good. You know, all three, it's weird because all three of these movies I was like, best picture, really? I feel like the category could have been six movies and not nine. And then finally is Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, the movie about the Asperger's boy whose dad dies in 9/11, and then he's forced to face all of his fears through the city as he's trying to unlock a mystery that his dad left behind for him. And let me tell you what is the most annoying thing ever created in a movie. When this kid is facing one of his fears, something he does that his dad taught him to help him get over the fear Izzy shakes a tambourine.
And are you kidding me?
Fucking obnoxious. It's horrible. I was like, what in God's name? The movie, I feel like this movie is in the Oscar running because it's about a dad who died in 9/11 and his, you know, son who may or may not be afflicted with autism trying to get over his dad's death, essentially, and over his life's fears through these mysteries and kind of character flaws that his dad left behind for him. It's another one of those that's just like way over the top and way like, you're gonna be sad because it's sad, you know, like it's just like forced in there. And
yeah, like why did the dad have to die in 9/11? Could he have died at
I don't
any
know
other
if
time?
This is based on something or not. I think there's a book. I think it's based on a book. But I don't know if the book's based on any kind of true telling or story. The dad dying in 9/11, I don't feel like that's a bad thing, you know. That's fine, and it did push the story forward. There's a big, like, super emotional scene where it's him and this older man. It's really hard because there are a lot of spoilery things in the movie, but him and this older man are actually listening to recordings of his dad calling from the building before he, like, the day that he died, essentially, on 9/11. He's calling and, like, leaving messages for his wife and his kid, saying that he's going to be okay and all this stuff, and they start crying, and
it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the whole movie is like, it's just over the top, like, emotional drama, and it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. It was probably the least surprising of all the movies I watched. I was like, oh, this is that movie where they're just going to try to force you to cry for 2.5 hours. It's really long, longer than it needed to be. The kid's a first-time actor, and I would say that he was pretty good for what he was, but what he was a really annoying character, and he's like the only main character in the movie.
How often does he shake the tambourine?
Pretty often.
Oh, yeah. No way.
It's not like throughout the whole movie. He does it, I think, like 2 or 3 times.
The only instrument that's more annoying than a tambourine is a harmonica.
I know. The worst or a saxophone. Really?
Whoa. Deal with your fears, Scott. Scott, it'll be fine. Don't be scared. You cross the bridge. Oh. Yes, Scott has a slide whistle at his desk.
Who doesn't have a slide whistle?
Oh, God. It just was, full of that. Like, the movie was just full of that. So, you know, I honestly don't even recommend it. I don't know why it's up. I know why it's up for Best Picture. I just don't agree. So Tom Hanks is in the movie through cutaways and, like, changes in the scene, but he's definitely not a main. I mean, he's a main character, but not. He's not like he's in the whole thing. Yeah. He's not the driving force of the movie. So, you know, whatever. The movie was.
Well, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for completing the Death Watch, or the Death Match final round of the Oscar Death Match.
So I think it's pretty clear that the winner of the final round is The Help. I actually didn't think. I thought War Horse might win, but The Help was way more entertaining and gripping than War Horse even came close to being.
So let's do this now. Of your final three movies.
So yeah. So because we have to, because we're in the last week.
You should pick the winner that you think is going to win, and then you should pick the winner that you want to win.
Okay, so the final three movies were Moneyball, The Artist, and The Help.
The Artist is going to get the fucking Oscar.
The Artist is going to win. And honestly, here's the thing. I have been thinking, I've had time to kind of soak up The Artist, and I've actually gone back and I watched it again.
Okay.
It's really fucking good.
Okay.
Like, I think upon second watching, upon like more open eyes as to what I was going to see, it's really good, like extremely good. And what Jean Desjardins, or the lead actor, does without speaking like a fucking word is awesome. I mean, he is incredible throughout the whole movie. It's the Artist is going to win. The Artist should win. I think as far as like doing something original and kind of breaking some boundaries, The Artist clearly was that. Moneyball was great. Moneyball's a fantastic story. It was really good to watch. I really enjoyed Moneyball, but I think The Artist did more for movies than Moneyball did.
Cool. Well, all right.
And I would also say that The Artist got $13 million, got funded for $13 million to be made and produced. And I would have loved to sit in that pitch meeting of like, so what are you going to do? Well, we need $13 million. We're going to make a movie with two unknown French actors and John Goodman.
It's not going to have any sound.
there's going to be no talking. And they're going to be like, yeah. What? You're making a silent film? Yeah, we're going to make a black and white silent film with two unknown French actors, and we're going to sell it to America. That's cool. Like, just whatever. I don't know how they got that through, but it definitely was awesome. So the artists, so the help wins this week, but because we skipped a week, we ran out of time. So the winner of the whole thing is the artist, and it should, and it probably will. And everybody should go see it. Everybody should see Moneyball. Everybody should see Midnight in Paris. And everybody should see The Descendants.
I think Hugo? Good.
And Hugo. Hugo's fantastic. Hugo,
all right.
Movie. Good. Well, I'm glad you saw him. I don't think I saw any of those, so I'm a bad film fan.
I will say this. I didn't see this movie, but a movie that got left out of the thing. When I see a movie like Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, and I realize that a movie like 50-50, which was that cancer movie that Seth,
Rogen.
Seth Rogen was in, didn't get a pick. Like, I feel like I have to see that movie, but just upon seeing Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close and knowing about 50-50, I feel like 50-50 probably dealt with a very emotional and heartbreaking thing in a much better way and less, like, forcing you into crying way than Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close did. You know, like, it bums me out that a movie that seemed a lot more tender and a lot more, like, well-executed got snubbed for a movie that is just, like, you know, you should vote for this because it's 9/11 kind of thing. So anyways, you guys are still playing Hero Academy.
Yeah, so Hero Academy had a push this week with some tweaks. They changed some balancing issues with some unit types, and they also introduced the brand new army, the Dwarves, who we are still kind of learning how to play. But holy crap, are they crazy.
And they also put the first army, the Dark Elves, also on sale right now for a dollar.
Yeah, so you can pick up the Dark Elves for a dollar, and I think Scott realized their full potential in the past couple of games that he's played with me, where he has completely by the way, playing against Scott is like playing against, like, a crazy savant who, like, you never know what the hell's going to happen. I can't tell you how many times. So the goal of the game is either to wipe out the entire enemy team by just killing them all, or to destroy their crystals, which are, like, their home bases. I have gotten, like, I think 3 or 4 games with Scott where I'll be one guy punching his crystal away from beating him, and he will turn around and somehow destroy me. It's happened like 3 or 4 times to the point where I am sitting there looking at my iPhone ready to throw it across the room. Like, how does he do this?
Our games have been insane lately. They've been, like, totally ludicrous, so.
They've been totally crazy. Yeah, I mean, for those that haven't picked up Hero Academy, it's from Robot Entertainment. They did Orcs Must Die. It is probably right now, you know, it's up there with Squids as my favorite iOS game of the past couple years. It is very, very addicting, beautiful to look at. The level of strategy is just incredible. You know, you can upgrade your units by putting different armor on them. The armor actually appears on the unit, and so you can just see, like, you know, for instance, like the orc, not the orc, but the Dwarven Annihilator has like a giant rocket launcher, and you slap all this armor on him and you're just like, oh crap, that looks amazing. So it, you know, definitely if you have an iOS device soon on Android,
thank God,
pick up Hero Academy because it is so much fun. And, it is asynchronous gameplay. So you don't have to spend hours playing it. You can take your time, take a turn, like literally since I'm teaching, the bell rings, I whip out Hero Academy, I do 2 turns before students turn come up, and then I do my next 2 turns during the next bell. So it is a blast. So hopefully the new army looks to be orcs, so I'm excited about that.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I also like the fact that there are a number of different game boards now. That's the last thing I'll add.
Yeah, different maps. There's new. I haven't used the one with teleporters yet, but there's a map with teleporters.
I'm playing one with Derek, and it's what makes this great is that not every game, like all the games, unfold differently because there's now different armies and different maps, so different strategies for every game that you play.
Yeah, I did my first Dwarves versus Council the other day, and that's, you know, those are two like really hard hitting armies that are really different. So it was cool to see that. So, and I think they're have every intention because it's been getting reviewed very well and it's been doing very well in the marketplace. I think they have every intention of keep and more armies to the point where, you know, you're just going to have a really wide variety of stuff to use. So
great. So, Matt, what is our comic book pick of the week?
Well, it's actually a comic book pick of 2 weeks because we were out last week. And this is actually from last week. It is something, and the reason I wanted to talk about it was because, weirdly enough, Amy, friend of the podcast, wrote us an email about this comic, Scott and
I.
Oh,
cool. Yeah.
And the pick of the week is Batman number 6 by Scott Snyder. It's part of the DC 52 relaunch. Batman number 1, I think, barely missed my pick of the week when it first came out of the 52. I don't remember what beat it, but something did.
Was it probably because of, what was that, Animal Man? Was that?
It might have been Animal Man. Yeah. I don't remember when this Batman series came out. But Scott Snyder's a horror writer. He came off of, I think, American Vampire? That's probably totally wrong. Don't quote me on that. But the series has been following Batman fighting these totally creepy... Oh, no, I was totally right. Scott Snyder, American Vampire.
All right.
Follows this creepy villain called the Owl. And is this fucked up guy who's like super... He like fights and he wears an owl mask and it looks totally creepy. And then he basically drugged Batman. And issue number 5, which we didn't get to talk about, was incredible. It was following Batman going through like this hallucinatory drug phase while he was trying to fight this owl guy. And the way they drew the panels was that you had to start turning the book while you were reading. So like panels would start shifting around while you were reading, and like you would turn it and eventually you would start getting lost. Like you were like reading the book and turning a page and you're like, wait, did I? And then you'd like look to see if you went the right way in the book. And
That was amazing.
Completely disorienting and absolutely like a total win. And issue number 6 was kind of the wrap up of this little series with the owl, and just super fucking creepy. And when it ends, you're like, oh, so that's cool, it's over, you know. But then they do like a final panel, like there's another panel where these like other owl dudes show up and are just the creepiest fuckers I've ever seen in a Batman comic. It just a total win. Awesome art, awesome storytelling. Scott Snyder is absolutely great with horror, and it's really cool to see him take a known character like Batman, really stay true to Batman as far as like being that kind of like dark detective, but putting him in a total horror story and having him deal with this like just crazy shit happening all around him, and you know, drugging him and then forcing you to kind of read through this story of him being drugged, and just really, really awesome. So highly recommended. The first 6 issues will probably, or the first 12, I guess, would probably be what it is, will get put into trade eventually. So if you missed it, do that. Or I would even suggest going on Comixology, because I think they're all only $1 or $1.99, and picking up the first 6 issues and reading this arc of him fighting the owl. It's absolutely incredible and a totally win. Total win for comic books in general. I think it's really good. So Batman
awesome.
Number 6
awesome.
By Scott Snyder. Really, really good.
Very cool, man. Thank you for keeping up with the comics.
Yes.
I learned much from them. All right. So, Scott,
I'm going to speed review SSX.
Yes.
Real quick.
Yeah, we are going long, and we do have a long open thread, so we'll do some speedy stuff from here on out. But Scott is a fan of SSX. The new SSX demo is out. And what did you think of it, kind sir?
SSX, I think, is my go-to extreme sports game. Like, you know, some people play skate or like a racing game or whatever, Need for Speed, what have you. Like, this is SSX is like, I enjoy it. I'm not great at it. I just like to play it. I like, you know, the music and the explosion, like the pyrotechnics when you're going over the big jumps and the, you know, the enormity of going down a mountain and just kind of like trying to hold it all together while you're doing all these crazy tricks. And this game, probably more so than theirs, kind of feels like, I don't want to say like a reboot, but sort of like maybe a revitalization of the franchise, like pulling elements from all of the previous games that work well and then adding new things into the game. Most notably, they added a wingsuit, which you don't get to use too much in the demo, but I assume that like at big jumps, you'll be able to like deploy your wingsuit and fly.
That's what it seemed like, yeah.
Yeah, kind of fly your way down the mountain.
I'm hoping it's not the demo they do in the beginning where you're just endlessly falling and doing tricks.
Yeah, I hope it's not that either. I hope you can like integrate it into your tricks. And I haven't had a lot of time to do that, but it seems like that. So, you know, it's like if you've played any of the previous SSX games, it's going to be all the stuff that you love. You know, like cool music that goes with the game. The music builds as you build your trick meter. a number of different control schemes. The thing, I just read something today in Wired that I thought was really cool. In order to build these mountains, they have a proprietary tool that they use to build the levels in. And for this particular game, they got together with NASA and used like geological survey data to build the mountains. So basically, in the concept of this game, you actually go down mountains like all over the world. And to build like these worlds, I mean, to build the mountains around the world, they used actual data.
That's
so
awesome.
So like the Himalayas. So
you're actually like going down actual locations.
Yeah, and you know, they probably just spruced them up with the rails and the ramps and everything, but like everything is meant to be similar to the locations like that you're going to. And then they've added things that have been successful or awesome in previous games. Like I think it started around the new like Need for Speed reboot, which is this whole concept of you always being sort of a part of the online community. So like in Need for Speed, I think they called it SpeedNet or RaceNet. In this game, it's called RiderNet. Mm-hmm. So basically you'll always have like very quick access to like the scores that your friends put up, the times that they got in the races. You can race against their ghosts. Like you can do like asynchronous competition or like, you know, synchronous competition with your friends online, or just like go down the mountain and just kind of chill and have fun. So, it's awesome. it's really shaping up to be a really great game, especially if you're a fan of the series. And, you know, right now there's a demo out, so you have nothing to lose by trying it. And, the only other thing I'll say is that at the beginning, maybe like a year ago, we saw a trailer for this game when it was called Deadly Descents.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And the fans kind of like freaked out because they're like, why does this game look like Call of Duty? Like, I thought this was a fun snowboarding game. And ever since that trailer came out, this game is once again a fun snowboarding
game. Yeah, I would agree. I had a blast.
Crazy tricks, good music. Yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah.
And then Matt, you've been playing something that, from a studio that I love, which is Gotham City Impostors.
Gotham City Impostors. I have a quick review of this, which is, do you like Team Fortress and Batman?
Yes.
Then it's a total win. It's great. Oh.
My immediate impression of this game was a lot of the weapons, the way they're sort of like duct taped together, reminded me of things from No One Lives Forever.
Yeah, yeah. Yes and no, because the weapons get pretty standard, run in the mill.
Okay.
But the armor and the customizations to your person, like your character that you can do, are really cool. Like, they didn't really carry that through because the weapons are all like guns. Like, they're like, oh, okay. Fucking
I saw one was like AK. A slingshot at one point or something.
There's a slingshot one, but it throws bombs. And that's like the only, that's the only weird one that I've run across. I'm not level 50 or anything crazy like that. I've just been playing for a couple weeks. It's kind of my sit for an hour and play games for a little bit. Cause the other game I have is Assassin's Creed, which is boring. And, but it's really fun.
It's boring.
It's really.
So what are you getting out of this game?
It's just super fun. The classes are all really unique and feel really good. You get like different weights on your character. You can move faster or slower. They all get different. The one thing that is completely different is they get different move kind of classes. So like, one will have roller skates that you can like speed up a ramp with. One is you can deploy like bat wings and glide around the city. The other is a grappling hook, which is really awesome. And then the other is what's the other basic one? Spring boots, which are cool. They let you like double jump.
Yeah. I remember those. I played it at PAX Prime and really enjoyed it. I loved there's like invisibility spray and like glider and all sorts of really fun stuff that you can.
The one that I've been using is you can get goggles and you can target for like your teammates, so and you rack
like
up,
you're a spotter,
you get 100 points for like every time you target somebody that somebody else kills. So like I end up usually running around for the first 5 minutes like targeting a bunch of people, and then my teammates just start taking them out. And then
so how is the community / competition online?
No one turns their mic on, which is fine.
Cool. Great.
Everybody just kind of plays and doesn't really bother other people. Like, you don't really, I haven't really dealt with too many negative people. It is kind of like, you know, kill a guy and you know, teabag him kind of atmosphere. So, but it's not done to an extreme. It's done in a really fun way. The game is absolutely fun. Like, the mechanics around it, like the art style and, you know, you can customize your guy to like say stupid crap when you kill people. And, it's just really fun, and it's worth the 10-15 bucks that you might spend on it. I haven't found any it's pretty well balanced as far as the matchmaking goes. So rarely will you end up on a team full of like level one guys against a team full of 50, you know? So
yeah.
So that
everything we'll remember that when this game was launched, all of the unlocks were available as individual purchases. How have you found the sort of frequency of upgrades to be in your progression?
Fine. They upgrade you every two levels, essentially. Or you get some kind of upgrade every level. You get a major one every two or three.
But you feel like you're getting stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And you upgrade pretty fast. I mean, it's like, cool. You as long as you play the game and take part in the match, then you'll be fine. And I've actually found that I don't do deathmatch that much. It's fun. It's not that bad. I just don't love it. There's another one called Fumigation, and you run around. It's basically capture the flag. Like you capture a base.
That's like the ticket drain, right? That one.
Yeah. Once you've gained, like they base it on how long you've controlled something, and once you hit 100%, it releases these fumes. And if you're Batman, it kills all the Jokers. If you're Joker, it kills all the Batman. And that one's really strategic and a little bit more fun to me than just running around shooting people. At level two, you get to make your own build out, and you can like unlock guns and start doing all this stuff. And that one's really cool. I actually did a build out that I really enjoy. I play as all the time. And, it's just a really fun game. I've had a blast just kind of sitting down and playing. And I think the fact that no one turns on their mic is probably part of the reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only people that have their mics on is really great is you can see how bad parents are, because you'll hear little kids running around the room because they have their Kinect on. They don't realize that their Kinect mic is turned on.
Oh, it is terrible when you play with somebody online that just has like the Kinect.
You're like sitting there and they're like, "Mommy, I want food." And you're like, "Oh my God, go feed the kid."
Yeah.
Your Kinect mic is on. So
I was just playing a match the other day of Mass Effect, and there was like a bro playing, and he was yelling at his girlfriend and he's like, "I don't care what you think." And she's like, he's like, "Listen, I'm doing what I want." And she goes, "Can nothing hear me?" And I just started laughing.
It makes you want to turn your mic on and just go, "Yes." So, all right, well, that was it. It's a good game. Definitely worth the 10, 15 bucks. Not a big deal.
All right, so we'll be back. Quick break. And we'll be back with our Twitter madness.
Sweet.
All right. Be right back. We're back. You just heard the Glitch Mob with their track Fortune Days. Big thanks to them for allowing us to use it. So we're back actually with our weekly Twitter question. And this question was a little bit special because we actually reached out to a lot of people that have helped us over the past 16 months on the site in some capacity. And a lot of them replied back, which is great. The question was, what video game franchise, film, or television series will be viewed as art in 100 years, and why? So we have a lot of people to go through here. So let's go ahead and get started. Who wants to start this, gents? Do you want me to start?
Like one of us or you? What?
Yeah, I guess I'll go ahead and start. Okay. So the first reply to that question about video games becoming art was from our good friend Allison Thresher, who was formerly the community manager at Harmonix, and now she works on Dance Central. She is awesome, by the way. She's a big supporter of equality in the gaming industry, and we are, of course, all about that. So hats off to her. Her non-serious answer is the Portal series, because why else did Grandma have something from the series tattooed on her body? Yeah. For those that don't know, she has a really awesome cake tattoo from Portal that is really pretty sweet. Yes. And her serious answer is, I don't know how we'll define art in 100 years, but I think just about anything from Super Meat Boy, The artists will be valued, debated, and studied as important indicators of popular culture in the 2010s.
I think she meant from Super Meat Boy to the artist will be
valued. Oh, okay. That is a take two. Yes. From Super Meat Boy to the artist, games will be valued, debated, and studied as important indicators of popular culture in the future. So I agree. While I haven't seen the artist, there's a couple of these industry folks that replied to us all point out something very special. These small studios, the ones that are, taking these risks and are the endeavors of small teams. Those are the games, especially, that are going to be viewed as giant accomplishments and possibly art in the future. You know, teams of like five or six guys or even one guy, that's probably going to be viewed as something very special.
Or what about something like Minecraft, where fans have used the game to build their own art?
Yeah,
that's true. That is true. And Minecraft is mentioned below. So yes. So awesome answer, Allison, and thank you very much for always having our backs, and we appreciate it very much. She retweets us and helps us out all the time, so hats off to her.
Our second response comes from Audrey and Emmerich from a company called The Game Bakers. They're former Ubisoft producers, but they are better known now for the iOS game Squids, which is phenomenal, and we've talked about it on previous podcasts, and there's reviews about it on our website. If you haven't played Squids, go check it out. They just released an update. Game is still really good, and there's more coming. And they write, my partner Audrey says GTA or Red Dead Redemption because it's true, it's well written, but I think art is a very selfish creation that touches masses because it's personal. A product like Minecraft made by one guy with a unique look and feel that is also a tool for others to create something has a good chance to be classified as art in a century if it's not forgotten already.
It's a very, very good point. And it's interesting because he brings up Minecraft, and then, you know, Audrey brought up these massive open world games. Like, I don't understand how the creation of an entire virtual world cannot be considered art, you know? Mm-hmm. And while a lot of us do, the mainstream media pretty much, they don't get it yet, but I think in 100 years they probably will. I mean, you can't look at a game like Red Dead Redemption, when you're riding into Mexico for the first time and not moved by that. I mean, that's probably, like, if you're to ask me in the past couple of years what single moment stood out the most, I mean, that was literally amazing. Like, it was unbelievable, and all of us, you know, felt the same way. So they're definitely skilled at creating emotion,
or the moment you save or don't save your team in Mass Effect 2, and super just gripping emotional moments.
Yes, totally.
So next up, we've got Bria Grant, star of Heroes and Dexter, who also did a great comic book with her brother called We Will Bury You. Awesome zombie book that I was collecting. And she says Local by Brian Wood or 30 Days of Night by Steve Niles. Both amazing comic books that have come out in the past 10 years. I think 30 Days of Night was maybe a little older than that, but just great, great books. Not the movie, by the way.
It's interesting. We didn't put comic books in the question, which was kind of my fault. I should have probably mentioned comics as well when I asked her this question. Do you guys think comics as a medium are going to be looked at as art in 100 years? Because it's still, in terms of art, it's still a rather new medium, you know?
Political
cartoons have been around forever, but in terms of cartoons for raw entertainment, not so much.
I think that there are... It depends on your definition of what level of art. I think as pop culture art, that they're already there. I think that they're viewed as art pieces and or can be viewed as art pieces. I think in terms of pieces of revolution or of some new nature or form of expression, I think we've seen things that will be examples of that. And I'm sure, you know, creators like Alan Moore and even Brian Wood and these names that come up a lot when you hear me talk about comics are probably going to be viewed as artists eventually. I think Alan Moore has kind of been able to reach that mark already, but they'll be there. I think yes. I think eventually series like The Watchmen, you know, that completely breaks all tradition of how comics are written and created is a perfect example of that.
Awesome. Again, so if you're listening, the question was, what video game franchise, film, or television series will be viewed as art in 100 years and why? And the next reply was actually from Team Unicorn, who we interviewed about a year ago now. And the person from Teen Unicorn that replied to us was Claire Grant, who is a lot of fun. And she says, Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings film trilogy, its beauty, elegance, and style are perfect complements to one of the most intricate, beloved, and beautifully written book series of all time. And I agree with that. There's something magical about that Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah.
That I think even in 100 years, because the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the novels are so loved, that these are also going to be in that same boat. So I completely agree with Claire.
I totally agree, because I think those movies took an art form that existed and elevated it to another level. Mm-hmm. That movie definitely mm-hmm. just blew me away. So
that's awesome. Also, on another note, Claire just announced, I think yesterday, that she is going to be voicing an all new character on the Clone Wars starting at the end of this season. So awesome. She's delving into the same biz as her husband, Seth Green, and actually helping out with Star Wars, The Clone Wars.
Cool. Awesome.
Which is awesome. And I'm looking forward to seeing what character she's actually going to voice. So that's super cool.
Scott.
Let's see. Our next response comes from Fernando Mello, who's a former senior producer on Dragon Age and now in charge of BioWare's web development. And the reply is, as for the question, in my mind, if I had to bank on one, it would be Star Wars. It's already lasted 40 some odd years and across many mediums and age generations. No reason to think it won't be around for a long, long time in this galaxy.
It is more than just a franchise to a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people almost look at it like a religion. I mean, it's insane how popular Star Wars is and always will be, you know. It's strange.
It's an entirely like a different world that has been like so fleshed out.
Yeah.
That you could speak about it knowledgeably, like probably more so than you could about things in this world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. All the different planets and histories and characters. It is definitely, they've written so much and fleshed out such an incredible little universe there. So
next up we have the director of Homecoming, Sean Hackett. And I'm glad I got to read this one, because Ash, when you texted me this question, this was the first thing that came to my mind. And he says, everything Pixar outside of that, maybe Emma Watson Google searches. And that's what I thought too. Emma Watson Google searches are clear.
Of course.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think Pixar is one of those creators that just elevates a medium to a level that is unreachable by anybody else. I mean, if you saw any of the Toy Stories, if you saw The Incredibles, if you saw, you know, Finding Nemo, Monsters Inc., like every single one they put out is just always emotionally gripping, so superbly done. There's almost no fault to it whatsoever. It's just an amazing work of art after amazing work of art to me. And they're just mind-blowingly good.
And it's not just because the animation's great, it's because the quality of the storytelling is
You can watch Toy Story 1, which was their first feature, and you might think, oh, well, that looks a little bad, but even then, you don't notice it. You don't think about it. It's never part of the equation, you know? Whereas you could compare that to Toy Story 3 and you're like, oh, both of these movies are on equal ground, equal footing. They're both just amazing stories done extremely well. So
I think not only that, but watching a Pixar animated film makes it difficult to go see an animated film from any other studio.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are some exceptions, but I think the other DreamWorks tends to put out very pop culture-y movies like
mm-hmm.
the Shreks and all that, which are good movies, but they're very kind of pop culture related. So,
mm-hmm.
Agreed. The next one is from our good friend, Mr. Gar. And he says, I hate to say it, but none. The way technology moves, there will always be better, more beautiful games. Old games will just be old games or classics, but I don't think they will show up in an art appreciation class. But you do say, however, games are art. And that is a good, it's sort of playing devil's advocate there, because he's saying that, you know, the way that society works, that the next best thing will always, you know, be right around the corner. So we're not going to really reflect upon things that are just pieces of pop culture today. I disagree, just because I want to be optimistic and think that hopefully eventually the rest of society will agree with my opinion that all the stuff that we're really interested in is in fact art and will be viewed as art in the future as well. But I think he does have a valid point. I don't know if mainstream media will ever embrace games and, you know, and the things that we love so much.
I think my only counterpoint to that would be comparing it to something like photography, where technology has advanced in hundreds of years that photography has been going on. But we still look at those original pieces as art. They're still, you know, yes, you can take a picture a billion times better than you could in, you know, 1890. But that picture in 1890, depending on who held the camera, is still art, you know?
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. That's a good point. Excellent analogy, sir.
Platinum Fist says, Back to the Future trilogy, if their events were relevant in 1885, 1955, 1985, and 2015, it's only natural to assume they will be in 2112.
That's a great point. and this is actually not the only person who brought up the Back to the Future trilogy. And of course, I agree with it because I love that. I love that franchise. So good answer.
I mean, that franchise really seems to have a lot of staying power. And, you know, it might be in part because, like, the generation that grew up with it, you know, are adults now and so can, like, afford to go, like, repurchase these things again. So it'd be interesting to see, like, if this, like, moves beyond, like, our generation to younger, you know, like, if we pass it on to our kids and grandchildren, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
which is something you would assume with, like, a movie trilogy like Star Wars, but maybe, like, not so much with this, but it would be interesting to see if it did happen.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Our good buddy Kittler C, who always responds, says, I could see DDR being seen as performance art at some point.
I used to work at a music store which had an arcade, and we had a DDR machine that for a while we put at the front of the store. So I would get to watch people play. Like, kids would walk in with, like bankrolls of quarters and just, like, feed the machine for 2 hours, take water breaks and lunch breaks and keep playing. And, like,
that's incredible.
You know what I mean? Like, that, there was a culture there, and I could really see something being published about that, like, as sort of a retro piece in the future.
Yeah.
God, I was so. Michael Coles at Michael Coles says, Mass Effect and Uncharted immediately spring to mind. Any game where you legitimately can worry about what happens next. First thing, Michael Coles, big thank you for always supporting our site and everyone else as well. Mr. Gar, Kittler C, Michael Coles, you guys are frequently tweet us, and we appreciate you very much. I actually got to play some Xbox with Michael Coles the other day,
which was
a lot of fun. And he is Canadian, and believe it or not, he works at EB Games. Does that name
ring
a bell?
Electronic Boutique?
Yeah. Yes, there in Canada there is still EB Games, and I had a nerd fit because that was like my lair when I was a kid. So he works at EB Games.
I think I was a Babbage's kid. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a Babbage's at our mall.
Because they were
up,
like, two doors down from each other.
Yeah, they
were
always
mall.
like
Babbage's and
spaces.
Like two little mall slots down was EB Games. So I would go to both, but they had the exact same fucking thing. So anyway. Yeah. But Michael Coles, obviously, these games are the Mass Effect series, the Uncharted series. These are probably the most polished of this generation. And I agree. They are the work of hundreds of different artists from all aspects of, you know, all different mediums. And of course, you know, if anything is going to be looked at as art in 100 years, it is probably going to be these. So, totally agree with you there. Good, sir.
This is like Uncharted was one of those games, kind of like how Matt was with Halo, where, like, even after you're done playing the game, you would be humming like the theme song. Like, I remember, like, when Matt and Adam used to boot up the Xbox. Yeah. They would, like, sing that jam.
Yeah.
And, like, every time I boot up Uncharted, I was like, ba 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 ba.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I did the same thing with the Gears theme for about a month when I got Gears 3. It was just, dun, 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 dun. I was walking around the house doing that for, like, a month, and my wife was hated my guts because of everywhere I went.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
So Scott.
Scott, you take the next one.
Midtown 583 says, Back to the Future series for the moral lessons it taught and all the continuing effects it has on pop culture. Agree. I still agree. You know?
Yeah. We agree with all of these people. Justin Banks, of course, always helping us out on the site. So thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Moral lessons. You don't think about the morality of Back to the Future, but Marty McFly definitely learns that greed is not the answer in life, and that the answer in life is just to be the best person you can be. So of course, yeah.
And you shouldn't sleep with your mom.
Yes, even if she's begging for it, if she's begging for that McFly wiener, you don't sleep with her.
So next up, we've got Axel99, our good friend Jesse Lamb, who is an amazing creator, has helped out the site all the way through. She says, many of the big AAA and indie titles will be seen as art. Game-based art communities talk about them all the time. Assassin's Creed, Mass Effect, Enslaved, Gears of War, all of them aren't just pretty pieces of 2D or 3D artwork. 100 years later, we'll have an even better understanding of game engines work and the technology that makes it come together.
It's true. And it was like we were saying earlier that, you know, these giant AAA titles, they are the work of literally hundreds of different artists. So hopefully in the future, they look at that as, you know, almost like an artist colony or a community that came together to create something great. And it's just a shame, unfortunately, that the mainstream media doesn't latch onto it as they should, you know.
Should I finish her opus? She says, specialized things like lighting, technical art, visual effects, level design, game design have all become their own little art form. I find TV series are becoming a whole lot more like film that embellishes the universe they're established in.
Awesome. So very, very profound. And I, again, totally agree with her. All right. So last on the list is Fluid Fire, who is, if you saw, I think it was episode, I want to say 48. The graphic that we used was actually her sculpture of Blasto, the Hanar Spectre.
Yes.
And she is awesome, and we appreciate her allowing us to use that. She says, I thought about it a lot, but honestly, I think Mass Effect mainly because of this essay. And we will put this essay in the show notes because I actually just read this after she posted it, and it is really profound. It's talking about how the Mass Effect universe is all about unity. And it's all about people of all different races and cultures and, of course, species coming together to unite against a common enemy. And, you know, the whole idea of unity through diversity is something that I've always been really fond of. And the Mass Effect universe is really all about that. So maybe even just as a cultural study in 100 years, they'll look back at some games that were really trying to push equality. And that's really one thing that I think the Mass Effect universe does do. It really pushes equality.
I think games do you think games like Dragon Age and Skyrim with gay rights and things like that will be talked about as well, as far as how big of a deal it was that you could have gay marriage or have gay sex in a game? Or
yeah, I do. I think that it is making strides, even though, again, the mainstream media doesn't really pick up on it too much yet, but I think it is definitely a step in the right direction for, you know, gender equality. It's definitely not hurting, you know what I mean? And I think eventually what it's doing is it's opening the eyes of all the other developers and making them realize that, oh, they may have to realize that the world isn't this black and white place, that there is all this diversity that they're going to have to kind of latch onto. So
we did get one more tweet, and it was from at Mr. Princess, or actually it's his name, but at something. Mass Effect, because not only is it a beautiful game, but also because it's set in a very rich and detailed universe. So definitely agreeing with some of the other sentiment of why these games kind of reach above, which is basically fleshing out the world that they live in. They're not just a singular moment. They're actually a full-on experience.
Mass Effect world's incredible. It's the level of detail is just, I can't even imagine, you know, like every single, even Christina, my wife's playing Mass Effect 1 right now. And Mass Effect 1, you know, you fly to all the different worlds. And each world, you know, there are dozens upon dozens of worlds. Each world has this rich, like, basically flavor text written about it for no reason other than to have flavor text written about it. It could have just been Gas Planet, but the planet has a name and the planet has a long
story.
Yeah. And everything in the game is like that. The whole world is just incredibly, incredibly rich. So, yeah, I totally agree.
I think not only that, they also did a good job of, like, making the world, like the universe, seem enormous by like the number of times you have to zoom out just to be able to like transfer yourself from one region to another. You know, you zoom out like four times just to see how insignificant this one little planet is in the solar system.
Yeah, it's true. That is very true.
So Ash, do you have an answer beyond anything that we've talked about so far?
Oh, geez. I didn't even think about myself. I honestly didn't. I'm just going to say that if you take everyone's answers and mush it into one big answer, that is my answer, because I think everything in this medium to me is art. And this is something I was joking around how my mom used to yell at me all the time when I was a little kid for, you know, playing too many video games, not understanding the importance of the medium or anything like that. But I think everything that we're playing is incredibly valuable. And I think hopefully in 100 years, all of these games, the ones with the rich stories and the fleshed out worlds and the beautiful art done by hundreds of people, all of that is going to be seen as art, just like a painting would be from 100 years ago today. So, yeah.
Scott?
I don't know. I just think it's interesting how, like, specifically with games, it's really just a number of mediums that come together to create the entire experience. And you talked about how the world of Mass Effect is so enormous, but I feel like there's also a lot of depth in, like, smaller games, like a game like Bastion, where they just have art, narration, like a really good soundtrack, and like a really fun gameplay mechanic.
Yeah.
And just in the span of like a few hours, that world feels like super rich and amazing, you know? So just to be able to create something that feels that significant in the span of like a few hours for a game, I think is really interesting as well. I think that's really significant.
For me, I actually do have an answer beyond what we've talked about a little bit. And it's that I always look at art as either an elevation of something that was pre-existing or a commentary on what's going on. And the thing that really spoke to me is actually three shows, but two creators. And that's Matt Groening with The Simpsons and also Futurama and South Park. Those two things are going to be looked at as commentary on the times that we've lived in. They're two very long-running series that completely did something that no one thought could happen, which was primetime animated TV for adults, and just was amazing. It has been for 15 years. You know, I mean, both series are awesome.
And they are a time capsule of very significant events that occurred in pop culture.
Yeah,
they're both satirical. They both look at things that have, you know, happened in society and kind of make us realize how idiotic our world is. So I agree. Definitely. And
I think
like
Simpsons
are the political cartoons of today. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
And I think the Simpsons created that space. And I think that South Park elevated that space.
Yeah. They make each other better.
Yeah.
Well, that's an excellent answer.
Well, wow, guys,
we did it. 50 episodes. We have completed. So as always, thank you guys so incredibly much for listening to the Rated NA podcast. This was episode 50. As always, you can follow us at Nerd Appropriate on Twitter and a couple other places.
Nerd Appropriate
as well
on Facebook. You can go find us on the wasteland that is Google Plus still.
And please, if you have time, give us a rating on iTunes.
It really does help. Honestly, any podcast you listen to, go rate on iTunes or leave a comment. It really does
especially
help.
Especially ours, though.
But I especially mean, ours. Yeah. And you should probably rate us higher than the others.
Yes,
so.
Of course.
Give us 6 stars.
Thank you very much. That was episode 50.
Cool.
Of
and
course.
I think Leany's going to take us out with the song Underworld. So thank you very much again.
That is awesome. And go buy that album. I actually did while we were talking and I tweeted it out. So go pick it up. It's a good cause.
Awesome.
I think that's it. And it's good music.
All right. And big thanks again to all of the alumni who wrote us back and shared in our Twitter conversation. You guys are the best, and we appreciate you very much.
We can't do it without you.
Here's the 50 more, fellas.